806 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here on this Friday. And talk about the weekend ahead. And big thank you, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, who joined us for a Gulf Coast traffic report this morning. We had regular traffic, then we had the traffic at Billy Goat Hole and the launches in South Baldwin. A number of people heading out for opening day of snapper season today. This is a big weekend ahead, but do not forget Memorial Day on Monday and Decoration Day and remembering our war dead. Talk more about that coming up later on in this hour. All right, as I mentioned just a few minutes earlier, joining us now, Senator Doug Jones, and a lot to talk about with the Senator. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sean. It's always great to be with you. I really appreciate it.
I want to get into a lot of stuff with you, but I put this up on Twitter a second ago, and that is a bill. I like the sound of this, a bill to bring healthcare manufacturing jobs to America and even back here to Alabama.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Sean, one of the things, and you and I have talked about this a little bit, that this pandemic has shined a spotlight on a number of things, healthcare disparities between rural and health areas, racial disparities. But one of the important things that we saw early on this is that we did not have enough healthcare manufacturing in this country. We didn't have enough masks, we didn't have enough gowns, we didn't have enough ventilators or face shields. And that was because we have become so dependent on foreign countries. And so about a month ago, I sent a letter to the governor because I recognized early on that we got to do something to pull those jobs, to pull all of that stuff back here. As we replenish the national stockpile, as we go forward, we're going to need a lot more of this stuff. Makes sense for Alabama to be a leader there and to try to do, you know, just like we did with automobiles, try to bring those jobs here, to try to put people to work here. Those are the kind of things that I think we can do. And this federal bill I've got will give tax incentives for companies to come in and try to repurpose facilities that exist or build up new facilities. It will give tax credits to try to bring people back on the payroll from jobs that may have gone away. It would give education credits for healthcare workers, and it would also increase some funding for communities to bring broadband in if they don't have that there. So I think that this bill is ultimately going to get a lot of bipartisan support because everybody recognizes we need to build up our PPE right here in the United States.
It took the words out of my mouth on the bipartisanship because, yeah, it sounds like the messaging you're talking about is something that I think there's some agreement in Washington and in Southwest Alabama and everywhere in between on this. Let's talk about that. So PPE and masks and the gowns and those things. What about the actual the drugs? Like we focused on insulin and other things that are being made in China. It worries me to have something that's that crucial that we can't make here at home. If for some reason we had to shut every port down tomorrow, that we couldn't keep our people with the medicine they needed.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think the bill is broad enough that it could include doing that in this country. I mean, I got to tell you, having been on the Health Education Labor Pension Committee, the drug manufacturing issue in this country and the supply chain is a real complicated problem, but it is also clear that we need to do more of that in this country while maintaining the cost. I think that's going to be the key, is trying to control the cost. We've got costs that are still out of control for prescription drugs, even though they're manufactured overseas, or at least the ingredients are coming from overseas.
Right.
And it's both. So I'm hoping this bill is broad enough. If not, we can tweak the language a little bit so that we can try to do that, because the key is both getting the supply in, but also keeping that supply at a cost that people can afford. That is going to be the juggling act.
And you're talking about creating these tax deductions for businesses to repurpose existing facilities or to build new ones to manufacture medical supplies. So it could be somebody who is, maybe there's somebody who makes something similar to a mask or something that repurposes, or would you expect people to start up new startups that we're making masks, we're making gloves, we're making gowns?
Well, I think it could be a combination of the two. What I would really like to see, Sean, is what I'd really like to see is some of these factories that are idle. You know, even though Alabama has had a pretty good economy leading up to this, we've still got factories and things that have been idle, and I think we may still see more to come as a result of this crisis. Good example is the Goodyear plant up in Etowah County that is that Goodyear is now saying that they're going to close. That's a facility that's been ongoing since the early part of the 20th century. It is one roof over 60 acres. Wow. That's a lot of room that you could take that building, repurpose it, use it, and not and put those jobs back into a community that's losing those jobs. Craig Field up near Selma, there's a whole industrial park around there that is not being utilized to the fullest. What I'd really like to see is taking and repurposing those facilities to try to pull those jobs back into areas that have lost those jobs.
Yeah, I think about assembling things, or let's say simplistically sewing things together, the amount of textile jobs that were lost here in Alabama over the years, and right. Knowing those facilities are there, and there's probably people that have that deep memory of how to do that still living here at home.
Absolutely. There's no question. After NAFTA, we were an amazing textile manufacturing and exporting state. We lost all of those jobs after NAFTA. We replaced them with automobile manufacturing. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, let's look for the next big thing for Alabama. We've done so well with manufacturing of automobiles. Let's see what we can do with healthcare. We've got the facilities to do it. We've got the labor force that could do it. We've got the business climate that's good to do it. I think Alabama could really be a leader in this, and it's coming. Make no mistake, you know, mark it down, that kind of manufacturing sector is coming to this country in a big, big way. We need to get out in front of it.
Right. Let's talk. You mentioned also rural broadband in this, and great pivot point, because I want to talk about that specifically and then talk about CARES Act money and its application here in Alabama. So let's talk about this broadband initiative. First of all, can they get it done? Okay, let's say that this fits, and we'll talk about whether they can use the money for that. But could we get a rural broadband initiative completed by December 31st? It seems pretty heady to try to do that in that amount of time.
No, look, I think we have to be realistic about broadband in this country and in this state. And it's really a two-part problem, Sean. It's rural broadband and access to broadband, but it's also the second component of that is having affordable broadband. There are places in Mobile and Birmingham and other areas that have good access to broadband, but people can't afford it. So we've got to do a combination. I think it would be really tough to get that done and get all that fiber laid and get it up and running by December 31st or even get the program there. But we got to start. I believe that what we need to do is that we need to have a much more comprehensive and broader-based initiative. Very similar. I keep comparing this to what President Roosevelt did in the 30s with electricity. He created TVA. He created the Rural Electric Administration to give electricity to the same people that do not have broadband right now. We need a rural broadband administration that is going to get this fiber laid, get whatever we can to these households, and do it in a way that these people can afford it. That's a long-term project, but again, it's one of those spotlights that this crisis has really shown a light on, and everybody now sees the urgency, not only for business, for health and telehealth, and specifically for education, to keep our kids on the cutting edge.
Yeah, this is one. And Senator Jones, that's one of the things. I'm going to throw my two cents in to see if it sticks in Washington. I've been looking at this for a month or so and questioned whether we could. You talk about electrification and what was done with that. What about doing some kind of funding broadband cooperatives, the way you do electrical? And since Absolutely. You could fund those, it's just an idea, if you could get those funded and created, at least on the books, before December 31st, and y'all were talking about when this runs out, and then okay, the funding has gone into them, and then their job is to implement these things. So you could get the money out of the $1.8 billion spent before the 31st. Does that meet the dictate?
Yeah,
on this?
No, it makes perfect sense, and that's exactly what we're looking at, is you can at least get the seed money. This would be this would be something that happened to be funded on an ongoing basis, for sure, but you could dang sure get the seed money out there and start this process. And, you know, that infrastructure already exists with the co-ops, the electric co-ops. Many of our electric co-ops are doing this over, you know, running broadband over their power lines already. That's an option. There's any number of things we can do if we just really focus on it. Everybody's talked about it over the years, and the federal government is, you know, the last 2 years we've put more money in the Department of Agriculture for rural broadband, but now I think everyone sees not just the need, but the urgency to make sure we get this done.
And I see this as one of those moments that, to be frank with you, I don't think we're going to be able to come up with money, and I don't know that we should, from the general fund budget for the state of Alabama. I don't think it happens unless you have some moment like this where you have a whole bunch of federal money coming to the state at one time.
There's no question. This is going to have to be a federal project, because it's not just an Alabama project. This is a project that affects everybody across the country, and that's what we've got to approach this. I really believe, going back to the FDR programs, that's what we've got to be looking at something similar to get the federal dollars into the states to make sure that we can get the broadband laid. And again, and I can't emphasize this enough, making it affordable for people. It doesn't matter if that broadband's running right by your house if you can't afford to run it into your house.
Do you have a number in mind? What is affordable? Is there a dollar figure?
I haven't got to that point yet, Sean. I mean, obviously that is going to be a variable. We just hadn't got there yet. We just know we're looking. There's so many things that are getting dumped on us right now to try to figure out, and that is one of them. What can we do to help with folks, whether and how you do that? I don't think it's direct subsidies, but there could be tax credits. There could be any number of things that we look at to try to get that, to get people the access and get it into their homes or where they can use it.
All right, with you talking about this, do you believe, and this will go micro out to macro on it, does that fit the definition of the CARES Act money that came to the state for response to COVID-19?
I think that's a little bit questionable right now, and quite frankly, this is what I believe. I think that at some point very soon, hopefully this Congress, before we go out of session in December, that Congress is going to do a much bigger, very targeted, specific broadband initiative. So if we're doing that, I would like to see the states use this money that the CARES package and what should be coming later to help make up for some lost revenue that they've got, because they're still furnishing the essential services, specifically, you know, cities and counties, for your fire department, your police, help them and give them that cushion, but also use this money for the testing. We're going to have to ramp up testing and contact tracing and have the things available to do that. I think that I'd like to see more money directed that way right now for this immediate issue, and let Congress work to try to get additional money that's specifically geared for broadband.
Yeah, one of the things that comes up a bunch, and help me if I misunderstand this, but we can spend the money on basically line items for the state bought test or PPE or whatever. Okay, you get paid back for that. But the state or municipalities or counties can't say, hey, here's our unrealized tax revenue from this period of time, so we're going to pay it back that way, right? It can't be used to fill in gaps.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Unfortunately, I had been a very strong advocate the other way around, because I felt like that our cities and counties were going to have to start laying off people because they were going to lose that revenue. Mm-hmm. They were going to have to lay off essential services while they were still, you know, they still had the expenses of the fire department and the police, the first responders in many places, healthcare workers. I had pushed to try to, give them some broader uses of that, but there was pushback from the administration. So the money right now is limited. But I think that, in talking to the Secretary of the Treasury the other day, they're trying to be very creative in what that can be used for. You just can't go too far for you. I mean, you can't use it to build you a new office building in Montgomery just because it's not as accessible as you might like it to be. You've got to use it for somehow related. I think Treasury's trying to be flexible within the bounds. And I'm hoping, Sean, to be honest with you, that in the next package that we start, we give some more flexibility to state and locals. There's a lot of talk about doing that in the next package.
You talk about the next package. Of course, that brings up the question about the next package. And this one I ask everybody who comes on, elected officials, when does it end? You see what I'm saying? When's the time you're going to say, all right, that's the last package? Because there has to be, unless it's forever, there has to be some point when you go, no, okay, yeah. that's all we can do?
Well, I'll tell you what, the Federal Reserve Chairman, Jay Powell, he answered that question this way. He basically said that it's going to depend on the virus and how we respond right now. If we do the things now, and this is an individual basis, and I think this was part of the governor's message yesterday, if we do the things that we should do as individuals to try to protect ourselves and our families and our communities by social distancing, wearing masks, those kind of things, then I think that that will end sooner rather than later. If we don't see that and we see a continued spread that is creating serious problems, it will go on further. I think there is a direct correlation between how we as individuals respond at this point going forward as to how soon this ends. And I think Jay Powell said that very, very specifically. He gave a shot across the bow to Congress that right now we've got to continue to put money into this economy, and we've got to tell people to make sure we do it safely, to do things appropriately, and we can wean away off of that and keep these jobs in place, keep these businesses in place. As I've said many times, that we can save lives and so we can save livelihoods.
And the governor said yesterday, talked again about personal responsibility on this, like you did, keeping our families safe. What do you think about the timeline and the pacing of Governor Ivey's reopening of the state?
Well, I think she has been under a lot of pressure, and I think she's been very measured in what she's got to do. And I think I've applauded her for that. I think she is probably as concerned as I am that opening up, if people don't do what they said, that we're going to have a problem. That's why so much of her message yesterday with Dr. Harris was personal responsibility. Let's get these jobs going. Let's open this economy back up, but let's do it in a responsible way. And if we can do that, we will be fine. It's just kind of that new normal that we keep talking about, of trying to do things in a different way to try to protect ourselves. And so I think with what she's doing now, we can do that. It is not inconsistent if we accept that personal responsibility. But if we only hear, oh, everything's open back up, and we try to go back to the normal that we had in January and February, we're going to have some trouble. Every healthcare professional in this country says we will get into more trouble. You only see what's going on already in certain hotspots.
Senator Jones, we appreciate your time this morning, and please keep us in the loop on what happens with this bill.
I'll do it, John. We're gonna work hard at it. I appreciate you letting me come on. I hope everybody stays safe and healthy.
All right. Thank you. Senator Doug Jones joining us right here on Mobile Mornings. We're coming right back. Grab your calls and text at 343-0106. Thanks, Kane. 8:30 FM Talk 106.5. Coming up in just a minute here, Dr. Bill's forecast. A look at the weekend ahead and into Monday. Come back, we'll grab your calls, also some text, Holden, and the April unemployment number.
Yeah, the Alabama Department of Labor reporting that April unemployment for Alabama is 12.9%. And according to Bob Grip, who broke down the numbers, for Mobile County it's 15.1% and Baldwin County 15.7%. The exact numbers, according to the Department of Labor, April's rate represents 283,787 unemployed persons, representing an increase of 216,783 over the month.
Okay, so that was the month of April ending, you know, so we're still, I don't know if we swung the other way yet. I mean, we're looking at 17% unemployment, right?
Right around that nationally.
And so we're a little, it's like being the nicest bad guy, but we're a little bit better.
A little bit better than the national.
15%
yeah,
for Mobile County.
That's high, and even higher for Baldwin County, 15.7.
Wow, we'll talk about this when we come back. It's 8:30. It's Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5.
836 on FM Talk 106.5. You're listening to Mobile Mornings Friday Style. Let's talk with Mitch McConnell from McConnell Automotive. Hey, Mitch.
All right. Good morning, Dalton.
So it'll be an extended Memorial Day weekend for many around here. And what can they expect if they head out to the lot at McConnell?
Well, Dalton, you know, everybody that may have been listening for a while now knows about this COVID-19 relief package we've got. But it's just, you know, it's going to end at the end of the month. And that's 0% interest, 84 months, the biggest discounts we've ever seen on financing ever, Dalton. So it goes away at the end of the month. So our Labor Day sale is all about the SUVs, man, the Yukon, the Acadia, Terrain. You know, we've got a little Buick Encore that we're selling for less than $20,000. That's a brand new SUV, and all these things 0% for 84 months. And so really we got an SUV for any family, anybody, and easiest place to shop is our website. And nobody anywhere in the state or on the Gulf Coast sells GMCs and Buicks as cheap as we do, Dalton. So the selection is great. The website's McConnellAutomotive.com, buddy, and we're just excited to be sure we pass these savings on during this sale.
No doubt. Thank you, Mitch.
I'll take care, Dalton.
You too. That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right, 8:37, and we'll come to the phones. Just I read a couple texts here. So Leo said, while we're talking to Senator Jones, ask him how we're going to pay for this China flu bailout. Where is all the money going to come from? Just print it. Leo, so the funny thing is here, though, the bipartisan nature of that, you can say that, and I think you're right to ask the question. I do all the time, where's the money going to come from? But you're going to, Democrats and Republicans are on the same page on this one. You'll see some difference here about when to end it. So the Democrats are going to want to continue these tranches of money and all this stuff for a long time, but Republicans have been, this is not a partisan issue. It might be partisan as like Pelosi tries to get spending for the Kennedy Center in or something like that, but the idea of, I mean, you talk about Treasury and Mnuchin, I mean, that's President Trump's Treasury Secretary. I mean, they're, so the Republicans, so I you know, Leo, if I would ask that of Jones, I gotta ask that of the Republicans too. They're all pumping the money in. But I do worry about those things that you do, Leo, but there's like seven of us that worry about that.
Yeah, they're both sides want to print money. They and some of that money is necessary to go into the economy, but, you know, they just differ right now on where that money should go.
Jason asking, what's the difference between Senator Doug Jones and his opponents? So that would be, that would either be Tuberville or Sessions. I'll say this, Jason, so some of the things, and so you can go back and listen to the interviews over time I've had with Senator Jones, and he has been, we're cordial with each other. We butted heads, and where we butt heads, Jason, be things like Second Amendment rights. Now he will come on and talk about how he hunts and does those things, and I go, well, so do I, but that's not the issue here. We're talking about the Second Amendments. We're not talking about whether you can have a hunting rifle or a shotgun. Mm-hmm. And so he and I have gone round and round on that in interviews in the past. That's a big difference between Jones and Tuberville and Sessions, right? I mean, they're going to be, neither Tuberville or Sessions are going to move to, remove your Second Amendment rights, where Doug Jones, I think, would line up with his fellow Democrats on that to some degree. He thinks it's okay to limit, whether it be magazines, type of rifles, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So that's where he is on that. Also, of course, in the state of Alabama, where he is contrary to a bulk of Republican voters, I would say, is his abortion stance. And you know that you're going to have, in the case of Tuberville or Sessions, you're going to have people that are fighting and maybe pushing some ideas here to the Supreme Court to try to change Roe versus Wade. Doug Jones, a strong supporter of abortion rights. And so those are, Jason, there's a bunch more. And obviously, whether they would vote or stand with the president, Doug Jones wants, voted along with what President Trump wanted on confirmation, but in all the other situations has voted with the Democrats against what President Trump wanted in a confirmation. I know there's more, but that's like a quick.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. The most notable one would be that I don't think Tuberville or Sessions would vote to remove Trump from office unless something especially egregious came out. I hate when I say especially. and so far, it seems like Jones has voted against the president in most of those instances.
There was like one time. Mm-hmm. But also remember, to be a Democrat to get elected in Alabama, even though with all the shenanigans of the Roy Moore situation, you've got to be way more, at least in rhetoric, right, on the campaign trail, you got to be way more towards center. The same way Republicans get elected in the Northeast or out in California, they're going to be way more towards center as well. And it's this weird thing that happens. People want to judge like a Republican from somewhere else in the country against the litmus test of a Republican in Alabama. Y'all, you won't get that type of Republican elected in those purple states. Same way you can argue you would never get, you know, in today's world, get a Democrat elected in the Southeast, you know, depending on, well, at a congressional level, but let's talk about a statewide Senate level or governor level, if they are as extreme as a Democrat in New York State. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're all Republicans and Democrats, but there's different flavoring to it depending on the parts of the country they're running in.
And there's been so much that's gone on this year, it's tough to remember sometimes that it is an election year. So I'm interested first, obviously, in the runoff between Sessions and Tuberville, but what will Doug Jones' campaign look like once we get toward closer to that general election?
It is going to be interesting indeed. Josh says, it's interesting to hear a Democrat state senator talk about personal responsibility. I thought conservatives had the corner on that market. I don't know. You know, this is why I asked him about it, Josh. I said, you know, that's what Governor Ivey's talking about. Now, is that parsed words? Sure, there's parsed words. He believes, I'm sure, in some personal responsibility, but he also believes in the government stepping in at a lot higher level than I do. But that's just, yeah, some of the back and forth. And you can go back, and we'll have Senator Jones on, obviously, a whole bunch between now and the general election, just like we will whoever ends up being the Republican nominee. And the best thing to do, instead of letting me be the proxy for them, is to set them up and let them discuss and debate. Wouldn't it be nice? We're not going to get a debate here in the runoff on the Republican side, but I would love, and I will work at it. I work at it on all these elections, and most of the times I get to talk to the hand, you know, in these, but I'm always pushing for debates.
Mm-hmm. They tell you talk to the pinky because your breath is so stinky. Is that what they take it back to the kids' school thing?
I don't think they're that tip.
You know, when politicians do bring up the personal responsibility thing, I think most of the time that entails the wearing of masks, it seems mm-hmm. like, especially on the left, it's come out more often than the right. But we have that 1-800-GOT-JUNK opinion poll question on our website that we asked this week. When outside of your home or vehicle, how often do you wear a mask? And a majority of people say never, 54% compared to 23% that say rarely, 18% that say most of the time, and 5% that say always. And I don't know if you've seen Alabama head coach Nick Saban's newest PSA that he put out there, where he walks into the office and he's wearing a mask, and then he gets on to Big Al for not wearing a Big Al mask.
How would Big Al put with the trunk there? How would he mask properly?
Good question. He'll have to go to the, I guess, elephant PPE store to find something like that. But I wonder, do you think that will change any minds in Alabama? Nick Saban telling people to wear masks?
It might. Yeah, it might within groups. And I think it is true, but I think it is silly, this idea that the mask defines your politics.
Yes.
You know, and just to be honest and obviously stir things up, I've talked about this for last month or so, especially when I push back against like Birmingham that made it an ordinance there that you had to wear a mask. You could be arrested and fined in Birmingham if you didn't wear a mask. And I have been railing against that government overreach since it happened. At the same time, if I go into a big store, I wear a mask. So this weird, like I'm somebody who will wear a mask, but I think it is your personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, me wearing a mask, this is maybe one of the core differences in political ideologies. Me wearing a mask doesn't mean I'm going to put the power of government to compel you to do it. Because I make a choice, my family makes a choice, that's what we do. And now, will I promote information and why you do it and availability of those things? Sure. But to compel you to do that, at the force of government, I'm not behind it. I might say, hey, here are the reasons I wear a mask. And if you think those make sense, then cool. If mm-hmm. not, then that's your choice.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. And speaking of Alabama, you mentioned Birmingham, and they were forcing people to wear masks. With this situation in Montgomery, and Montgomery Mayor Stephen Reed coming out on Wednesday and saying they were severely lacking in ICU beds and sending patients to Birmingham, and yesterday an update that they were at 3% left in their capacity for ICU beds. But he mentioned one of the things, he said he thinks that Alabama reopened too soon. said he's considering more citywide restrictions. That comes as Governor Kay Ivey says that she's opening more businesses up in the state. More activities will be allowed. I don't think that Montgomery right now has a face mask rule in effect. I'm wondering if that'll be one of the things that Mayor Reed is thinking about up there.
And then you'll be... would that apply to the governor then if she lives inside the city limits of Montgomery? All right, to the phones, Thomas and Theodore. Hey, Thomas.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. Right now, it's a pleasure. Yes. Yes.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
We're here.
We're here for you.
Okay. You can hear me?
Clearly.
Okay. I just wanted to say to Dalton, he's positively, negatively correct in most of what he says.
Thank you. I think that's good, right?
He really does. I also was listening to Powell. Now, Powell was a Trump appointee,
mm-hmm.
and now he's saying we need more stimulus. I agree with him to get put money in the hands of the people to spend it. That's what we need. We need them to spend it to spur. And Powell says that we have enough money to cover the debt service, Sean.
I don't believe it. I just don't. But and the spending it thing, you've talked about this a couple of times, and that is interesting as well. We were saying this on the show right away, that the human nature on the individual checks, right? Human nature would be, I think, that if you go, all right, the government is worried enough about this situation, they're sending us these checks, I think a lot of people say, well, I better squeeze this and tighten down and save every dollar of this versus going out and just spending it, other than what you have to spend it on, rent and those kind of things.
That's what I'm doing. That's exactly what we're doing, my wife and I. And as far as the $1.8 billion we sent the Mobile Regional Property Owners Association, we sent a model to Montgomery. And what we think they should do with the money is build... we need rural hospitals bad.
Yep.
And build two or three rural satellite hospitals.
Can they make that fit the definition? I think that's going to be the interesting question going forward.
Yes.
Is,
and then you bring the broadband into those hospitals, and you collect two birds with one shot. And then...
Scotch
you
double.
Also go through all the hospitals and you refit them with PPE equipment. And I believe I'm just a homer, and I think I could spend that $1.8 billion.
There you go. Well, it's a challenge is accepted by Thomas, so let us know. All right, 848. And by the way, too, one of the... I want us to be manufacturing medical supplies. So I agree with Senator Jones on that, but that's also what President Trump has said. So there's bipartisan there to bring, and Jeff Sessions has said it on the show. I think there's a lot of people that would agree with incentivizing manufacturing of not just the PPEs, but basic drugs like insulin and that. Getting that, so we, if a situation happened where you had to close every port tomorrow, that we could keep our people, you know, with the medicines they need, the equipment they need for some long period going forward. I think that's just smart. I think that is smart. But the question here is, will we be able to, like Thomas talks about, spend the money before December 31st in a way that fits what Treasury says? I don't know that we can pull that off. We will see. And by the way, too, let me just play the little clip. Can we play it going into the break? Because Thomas made a reference to the cut that I played from the president yesterday. I thought this was just one of those moments of zen. Here's President Trump yesterday at a press conference talking about his daily coronavirus test.
I had a two-week regimen of hydroxychloroquine, and I've taken it, I think, just about 2 weeks. I think it's another day. So, and I'm still here. I'm still here. And I tested very positively in another sense. So this morning, yeah, I tested positively toward negative, right? So you know, I tested perfectly this morning. Meaning I tested negative.
That was my yesterday's moment of zen.
He took a scenic route, but he got there.
8:50, be right back. Thank you, Kane. 855 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. All right, front page of FMTalk1065.com. Dalton mentioned it a second ago, the 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. So say about my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Maybe this long weekend gives you a chance to identify more junk you need gone. They can handle it. It could be inside your house, outside your house. You know, the outside of the house stuff is probably what most people don't think of. If you got big stuff around the house and you need it gone, and now I may have some kinfolk that have vehicles that don't run anymore, and we have to talk to Trey about moving those. But if, I mean, swing sets, storage buildings, you know, above ground pool. If you got big stuff you need it gone, he can handle that as well as going and cleaning out a storage unit. You know, you don't even remember what's in the storage unit. Why are you paying for it every month? Get 1-800-GOT-JUNK to meet you there, clean it out, and it's just as easy. Go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com and make an appointment or pick up the phone, 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They'll give you actual time and day that y'all all agree on. They come out, they quote your price. If you say, yeah, then they get to work and get it done. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, before we wrap, I want to talk about this more on Midday Mobile, but two things. Number one, coming up on Monday, Fisher House, you know how much we think about the Fisher House, how much we think about the Fisher House charity. They have a special that's going to run on Monday, Memorial Day. Fisher House, for those that are uninitiated on this, it's the best way we've found to describe it. You know what Ronald McDonald House does for families that have children in hospital facilities. Fisher House does the same thing for families of veterans that are at VA facilities here in the United States and around the world. They build homes nearby, so those families, those loved ones can be near those members of the military as they get their treatment. And in addition to putting those places for people to be in that home that does not cost the families of the veterans anything, in addition, they have a program too where you can use your frequent flyer miles and donate those to Fisher House to help fly those families to those VA facilities. It's really a special charity, and that show is going to be running on Monday. Also, Memorial Day Monday, South Alabama Veterans Commission is holding their memorial at 8:30, but they did point out the public is not invited. Members of the military will be there representing the branches. I know Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl will be there. They will live stream it on the South Alabama Veterans Commission Facebook page, but because of COVID-19 and restrictions, they are limiting the number of people being there. I know that at the three-way on Dolphin Island, where we have the Memorial Day commemoration each year, they're having it, but they have placed seating there, and they're asking you to use that seating because the seating is spaced out as per the directions on that. So, and if we get an update from what's happening in Baldwin County, we'll pass along to you as well. All right, Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. Check us out online, fmtalk1065.com, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.